Thanks for joining us on a Wednesday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw, going solo today with my co-host, Alex Wolf, prepping for his wedding. I think that's inexcusable, but we'll let it slide for the next 2 weeks. We are talking the LeBron hypothetical after his final matchup with Dwayne Wade last night at the Staples Center. King James suggested that the only two spots the game could have been played were in LA or at Madison Square Garden in the heart of New York City. We will get into that, the implications of it, and what would have happened had LeBron decided to join the Knicks once in 2010 and once in 2018. That next on the Locked On Knicks podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shull. I got a little bit into my Knicks fan background last time out. I want to get a little bit into my journalist background, and when Alex Wolf is back on the pod, we will have him do the same. I wanted to do this from a very young age. In my fifth grade yearbook, it is clearly stated, I said, when I grow up, I want to be a sports broadcaster. And again, my Knicks fandom started right around the same time, maybe 2-3 years earlier. So I was always hoping the two would overlap, and now they finally have. To pursue that, and the NBA was really both as a play-by-play guy, which I still do today as a side, and as a writer, and then eventually as a podcaster, the NBA was always kind of my primary interest. So in college, after growing up in New York City on the Upper West Side, spent my whole life here, I go out to Arizona, attend Arizona State, and I spend my final 3 years there getting to cover the Phoenix Suns. And the Suns, unlike the Knicks, are very generous with their media accessibility. Really, it was just kind of a dream come true because you'd have all the road teams come in. I got to interview guys like Goran Dragic, Eric Bledsoe. I got to know all of our boys, Jeff Hornacek, extremely well over his year and a half in Phoenix that overlapped with mine. And then I also got to interview some guys who came through on road teams. I got to talk to Otto Porter Jr. one time. I had a really just invigorating conversation with Bojan Bogdanovic. I had an all-time great interaction with Patrick Beverley. All right, so I walk out of shoot around that morning, and Beverley is just kind of sitting on the side on his phone. And he's just staring into his phone. I just kind of assume he's texting someone. And as I'm walking by, he says the phrase, "What up, young killa?" And I look around because no one had ever referred to me as a young killa before. I don't really look like a young killa. I don't think I fit any of the intrinsic qualities or possess any of the intrinsic qualities of a young killer, but I took it in stride, and I wanted to say, "What up, old killer," but that seemed potentially borderline problematic. So instead, I just said, "Not much. How's it going?" And then at that point, Houston Rockets guard Patrick Beverley, he looks back up at me and says, "No disrespect, man. I'm talking to my son." And then I see out of the corner of my eye that Beverley is talking to his son on the phone, his like 2-3-year-old son at the time. I'm just mortified, and I say, "No worries," and I keep moving. That was one of my favorite interactions. Another one of my favorite interactions were when the, if I have my years correct, the 2014-15 Miami Heat came into town. I got to interview Eric Spoelstra. I talked to Chris Bosh for a couple of minutes, and just because I kind of waited him out, I got 4 or 5 minutes solo talking to Dwayne Wade, and that's honestly, like, even up to this point, one of, like, the pinch-yourself moments of my relatively young career doing this. I mean, you could imagine, that, like, for someone who grew up loving the NBA, there's nothing quite like that. And I say that as an easy, if abrupt, transition into Dwayne Wade and LeBron James last night, where they meet at midcourt after the game. There was this cool stat out there. If I remember correctly, 15-15, or it might have been 16-16 against each other all time. LeBron's Lakers won the day. They meet at midcourt, and Wade was like, I don't remember the exact quote. He's essentially like, "Oh man, this game like really couldn't really have been anywhere else." And then LeBron responds, "It was either here or the Garden. That's it." And that got Knicks fans into a tizzy. The hypothetical that it was one of those two. It was the Lakers or the Knicks, where LeBron wanted to finish his career. And it's this interesting thing, because obviously heading into his 2010 free agency, there were a variety of points where Knicks fans, and I put myself in this group because we are slightly self-deluding to a degree. And I think part of it was also the fact that the NBA intelligentsia as a whole probably wasn't quite as up to par as it is today. I think there was a kind of a lack of knowledge on this, but a lot of people, including some media people, thought the Knicks were the favorite for LeBron, and some people were kind of framing it like it was a foregone conclusion. I don't think the people who were really in the know, the Adrian Wojnarowskis, the Brian Windhorst of the world, were saying that, but there were certainly fans and I think certainly media types who were of that opinion. And I was naturally pessimistic. I'd been burned so many times in my young life as a Knicks fan. I was never quite convinced it was going to happen. And then I remember, like, the day before, there were these people saying it was a sure thing to the Knicks, and I let myself hope. And then, of course, the decision pops on. The reports beforehand were that he was down to Miami and Cleveland, and then it was Chicago kind of being a dark horse, and then he ends up going to Miami. And when you look back at it at the time, even though I do believe it was genuine, and I think the comment last night, unless you believe, is I think Roger Sherman of The Ringer posited that LeBron's comment possibly was just to troll James Dolan as kind of a FU for how he allegedly treated Carmelo Anthony, and that's not a defense of Dolan, just that I don't know how much Melo necessarily deserved. I think it was legit that LeBron had some fascination at various points in his career with the Knicks, and it's clear that this is like a league-wide phenomena to a degree, that guys respect the Madison Square Garden experience, and they treat it as a special thing. And you see it with all these guys over the years, whether it's Kobe, whether it was Steph Curry's kind of breakout performance, the 54-point game, they bring a little bit extra. And I thought there was a good note in the Stephen Bondi article on the New York Daily News. My apologies if I pronounce his name wrong. He was talking to Enes Kanter, and he was talking about like how much he invested into playing at the Garden when he was on the Jazz and Thunder respectively. And he said, you have to make sure you got new kicks, make sure you're looking good. If you got acne on your face, you make sure to try to hide it. You want to look your best for the Garden because it's New York, and you hide that acne, according to Kanter, by putting foundation on it, which is just spectacular. I mean, it's that big spotlight on the court. You have to do it. And he even talked about how they had a specialized haircut guy come in for games before the Garden. So it's clearly a very, very big deal for guys throughout the league. But then practically, there were all these reasons why it wasn't feasible for LeBron to come to the NBA, and certainly not with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And this was something that Wade was of the opinion of too, and clearly it was a discussion point because Wade responded to it like it was when he was on the Vertical podcast, which was hosted by Adrian Wojnarowski of Yahoo Sports at the time in February 2017. He said, quote, on the possibility of the big three going to New York instead of Miami, they just wasn't prepared. They wasn't ready to take on what we wanted to do. The city, yeah, the city was ready. The market was there. It's New York. But from an organizational standpoint, we didn't feel like they could handle it. And, I mean, he's not wrong. I mean, here's the thing. The Knicks had space for two max guys that summer. They didn't have more than that space. And LeBron had just come off spending the first 7 years of his career with an owner he hated in Dan Gilbert. Was he really ready to go to an objectively worse one in James Dolan? And beyond that, he had never really had a great coach there with Mike Brown. I think Mike D'Antoni clearly has a much better track record and clearly was a much better option. So that would have been a positive. But you look at the front office, and I actually think Donnie Walsh, at least prior to this current regime, was at least in my Knicks fandom, let's just call it 2002, 2003, to about 2016. I think he was the most competent front office guy they have. Like the group he built with David Lee, Wilson Chandler, Danilo Gallinari, eventually tacking on Raymond Felton, a young Timofey Mozgov. Like I think that was the most competent roster building the Knicks have had in a long, long time. So I don't want to take shots at him. But you look at the current state of that roster that had essentially nothing. And in the Knicks' defense, I mean, part of that was that they wanted to clear a lot of room. But simultaneously, you kind of had to have that one guy to re-sign. And whether it was trading for Chris Bosh mid-season the prior year, when he was pretty readily available as Toronto thought he was going to leave, and we're going to get into that next segment, there were avenues for the Knicks to maybe preemptively acquire someone. But the sum of it was that even if the Knicks, again, like, had some theoretically positive qualities, you look at the state of the franchise in 2010, and I think it was from 2001 to either 2017, or it might have been to 2010. Bondi referenced in his article. I'm not sure quite what the years were, but over that stretch, they not only had the worst record in the NBA since 2001, but they'd also paid the most luxury tax of any team in the league. So they were spending the most for literally the worst. So essentially, like, if you had an XY graph of incompetence, the Knicks would be in the lowest possible corner in the worst possible quadrant. It was as bad as it could possibly get. And I think symptomatic of that, the Knicks' move to acquire LeBron was to send Isaiah Thomas to make the final pitch, the same Isaiah Thomas who had been fired 2 years previously for sexual assault. So that's not exactly indicative of organizational stability. You combine that with the fact that Miami had the non-existent state tax rate, and the fact that they were the only team that could fit three players. I really do believe Miami and Cleveland, and to a lesser degree Chicago, were the only viable contenders. But I want to operate in a hypothetical, because as a Knicks fan, that's generally a good space to be in. And these next two segments, I want to break down what the Knicks would have looked like had LeBron signed in 2010, and then in our third and final segment, what they would have looked like if he had signed in 2018. We're going to get into that next on the Locked On Knicks podcast. Guys, if you're like me and possess the unfortunate combination of having terrible circulation, having moved to Arizona for 4 years, and then having moved back to New York, by which point your resistance to the cold was relatively non-existent, may I recommend Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. Those are great, by the way, if you haven't tried this out. Really, really love them. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees and are powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. Pretty useful. Perfect for any family member or friend on your holiday gift list. Great for anybody who works outdoors, skiers, snowboarders. Action Heat clothing provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts. Ooh, sounds excellent. And long johns. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. Action Heat is available for both men and women, and they have great new styles and models just released for this 2018-19 winter season. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm even in the most frigid winter weather, which we are about to get a lot of in New York, so be sure to check out Action Heat. Welcome back into Locked On Knicks. I am your new host, Gavin Shaw. RIP James Marseda. Long live James Marseda. We are going to continue what is an exercise in masochism. Because again, I don't think there's any truer expression of being a Knicks fan than harming yourself by thinking about what could have been. All right, so let's talk about 2010. The Knicks were competent enough to create two max cap slots that summer. They pulled that off, and they would have potentially, depending on how far they were willing to dip into the luxury tax, have had room for a third player if he was willing to take a discount, or a pretty significant discount, or if all three of the guys were willing to take somewhat of a discount, like what ended up eventually happening in Miami. I think the only way the Knicks get LeBron is if they have someone in place already. And I went back and I looked at a Bleacher Report article in 2014 by Jim Cavin, and he suggested that the Knicks could have traded for Chris Bosh before. And you look at some of Bosh's comments, both at the time and retroactively, it was pretty obvious he was ready to get out of Toronto if the Knicks had put together a package around David Lee. That feels like something that's fairly feasible. And you might ask, what's the value of having Bosh, given the fact that he was a free agent the coming summer? Well, you get him acclimated to New York, you get a few months to pitch him on being a Knick, and you let him play the role that Amari Stoudemire eventually played the next season on what could have been, I guess would be the better way to phrase it, a relatively fun Knicks team. And now Gallo, Chandler were both a year younger. I don't believe Felton was on the team at that point, so they would have been pretty bad. But there was the window of opportunity in the sense that I think he would have loved playing for Mike D'Antoni, and it would have been the first time in his career he had a coach with that level of creativity who would have really pushed him out to the three-point line. And I think there's a chance that, again, you're talking about a team at that point that I think you can make an argument for Stephon Marbury. I'd argue they had gone probably, let's call Marbury a star. That's a team at that point that had gone about six seasons without a star player. If you want to say Marbury's production tailed off after 2004, 2005. I think you're really welcoming Chris Bosh. And Chris Bosh is someone who would get idolized at that point, and maybe not quite to the same degree that Melo did. But I do believe the combination of D'Antoni and living in New York and getting that New York love, I think Bosh would have wanted to remain on the Knicks. And much like Wade with Miami, LeBron suddenly has a pull to come to New York. And now that's not necessarily equivalent to what Wade brought to the table, but you get Bosh pitching LeBron on the idea of being a god in New York City. And it's certainly an idea that I think has intrigued Bron over the years, and we've gotten little hints, little notes, little quips that have suggested that. So somehow the Knicks work their magic, and they convince LeBron to join a team that is built around Chris Bosh himself, and then maybe a third borderline star. The same Bleacher Report article suggested Joe Johnson. I wouldn't be opposed. Let's just throw Joe Johnson into the mix there. And then additionally, in that scenario, you don't have to trade for Carmelo Anthony, and you have Danilo Gallinari. You have Wilson Chandler. Maybe you sign Raymond Felton anyways. That's a pretty solid group at that point. And maybe you have someone like Joe Johnson. Or alternatively, they don't sign Johnson, and they trade the same package that they traded for Melo, given that he wanted to come anyways, and then when you have arguably his best friend in the league on the team in LeBron, Melo doubly wants to get there. So ideally, they would have been smart and maybe not having the desperation of having to win right away by having LeBron there already and knowing that Melo was kind of eating out of your palm at that point. They don't sign Joe Johnson. They keep Danilo Gallinari. They keep Wilson Chandler. They keep Mozgov. And then I think the financials would have been quite iffy on this, but let's just say they somehow get Melo to agree to a contract. Then you have a core of LeBron, Melo, Bosh, and interestingly enough, because here's the thing, I think Dwayne Wade is an infinitely, or at least in his prime, and frankly right now too, because Melo's washed, but in their primes, I think Dwayne Wade was an infinitely better basketball player than Carmelo Anthony. But Carmelo Anthony could have been a better fit next to LeBron, thanks to his ability to shoot the ball and play one-on-one. And I know the theory of Olympic Melo was always better than it in practice, and that was kind of proven out last year on the Thunder. But again, I will posit that Melo was washed. He was not when he first came on the Knicks. So you have the idea of Carmelo Anthony playing off Chris Bosh, playing off LeBron James, Wilson Chandler, Danilo Gallinari, maybe in the mix, maybe not, but some good shooters. That's a team that probably their first year, the same thing happens to them that happens to the Heat. Sans Carmelo Anthony, presuming they don't trade for him, they lose to the Dallas Mavericks because LeBron fails to step up in the finals. But then the next year you have that core LeBron, Bosh, Melo. Probably they don't sign Tyson Chandler, but you could say they're interchangeable, Chandler and Melo. Maybe they have Gallo. Maybe they have Jason Kidd. Maybe they still end up with Jeremy Lin. They have Landry Fields as a role player on that team. That's a team that beats the Thunder. And it's a team that gives the Spurs a run for their money 2 years in a row. I think with the prime Carmelo Anthony combined with LeBron and Bosh, I think it's a team that, frankly, could have beaten the Spurs twice. And I know the Spurs were just a juggernaut that second time around, but I certainly think you get two titles out of those two teams. And talking about this, it makes me tear up a little bit because I would have just been in a state of orgasmic ecstasy for 4 to 5 years running. I would have been, it just would have been heavenly. It wasn't meant to be, obviously, because Knicks fans aren't always meant to have good things. But that is the hypothetical of LeBron joining the Knicks in 2010. Now let's ask another one. What would have happened if LeBron had joined the Knicks this past summer? We're going to get into that next on Locked On Knicks. Third and final Locked On Knicks segment. Hopefully this one gets you going. End of your Wednesday morning commute into work, or maybe you're taking some breaks throughout the day. Either way, we genuinely appreciate you being with us. Just a reminder, you are listening to Locked On Knicks. It is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. Please follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks is the account. You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Gavin Shaw. You can follow my co-host, Alex Wolf. I can't remember his handle off the top of my head, but it is easy to find. He also writes for Posting and Toasting, so we highly encourage you check out their work. And I know Alex and his cohorts do some great stuff there. Also, a plug. We are planning on having Jonathan Marchi, whose name I am 100% butchering, and I have to ask him how to pronounce his last name, of Knicks Film School, which, frankly, when I was kind of catching up on this Knicks season, his podcast, which is great, and anyone who doesn't listen to it, I highly recommend you do. They actually had James on a couple of episodes back talking about his time on Locked on Knicks, so that's certainly a good one to get in on. He does great work, and he is going to come on this podcast next Tuesday. We have that tentatively scheduled, so that's something I am really excited about. All right, let's get into it. And this one is more of a thought experiment, because I think in 2010, again, the Knicks had traded for Bosch, and they were theoretically slightly better managed, and James Dolan didn't own the Knicks. There was a world where LeBron, I think, could have ended up in New York. In 2018, I don't really believe that was a possibility. I guess the one scenario would have been if the Knicks had just been expertly managed over the last few years, or Kristaps Porzingis had stayed fully healthy and maybe evolved into an All-NBA type player. Like, would there have been a small temptation for LeBron to sign a one-year deal in New York and just to kind of see what it's like? I don't know. Maybe. But more than anything else, this is just a thought experiment. This is if LeBron had decided to sign with the 2018-19 New York Knicks, how good would they have been? And I put this one into two different boxes, because I think there are two ways it could have gone. Either way, if you sign LeBron, you're going into the luxury tax, but I think the most likely scenario is they would have attached a first-round pick to Enes Kanter, shipped him out of town, or alternatively released him, and which I'm not 100% sure would have been feasible, because I'm not really a cap expert, but let's just roll with it for now. All right, so either way, they don't have Kanter on the team, most likely. Or they're keeping Kanter and they're paying a ton of luxury tax. Let's just say James Dolan says to hell with it. They're paying a ton of luxury tax. In scenario one, your starting lineup is, and remember, this is my dream starting lineup. So Frank Ntilikina is your starting point guard, even though I think realistically it would probably be Trey Burke to provide a little bit of floor spacing, and because he's been the starter the majority of the year. But in my dream hypothetical, your starting lineup is Frank Ntilikina, Tim Hardaway, LeBron, a healthy Lance Thomas. Keep in mind, this is the start of the year. Enes Kanter, and your bench rotation, Knox, Burke or Moutier, whoever's playing better at the moment, Alonzo Trier, Damian Dotson, Mitchell Robinson. And now, in a lot of ways, I actually think this is kind of an ideal complementary supporting cast to LeBron. And obviously, the best supporting cast to LeBron would be a team that actually had high-level NBA talent across the board. That is not a possibility, but in terms of role players, I think in some ways this team is better situated to play around LeBron than last year's Cavs were. And I understand they don't have the same amount of vets, they don't have the same totality of shooting, but you have a little bit of a better balance. Hardaway is kind of the, again, in the non-superstar tier, the ideal second banana to LeBron. Like, if you put Tim Hardaway on any of LeBron's first seven Cleveland teams, like, wouldn't he have immediately been the best guy LeBron played with, which is really just an incredible indictment on those early Cleveland teams. But he's a guy who doesn't need a lot of time on the ball creating. Like, he doesn't need to be the point guard when LeBron's in the game, because he's not a point guard. But he'd be perfect off the ball with LeBron on the floor. Against bench units, you can use him as a number one option, which is frankly a role that he's significantly more suited for than the one he is currently playing. So I think that's kind of interesting. Lance Thomas and Ntilikina, both very solid defenders, which you want around the current iteration of LeBron. And then you're throwing Kanter in there just as a talent play. If you want to switch it out for Mitchell Robinson, then I think you also have to take Lance Thomas out of there, because then you just don't really have enough one-on-one offense, and you have another situation where LeBron has to do everything. But I think Kanter is just a release valve for LeBron in the regular season, guy you can throw the ball to, get some points, get some numbers. And then LeBron playing with some of the bench units on that team, I actually think are really interesting. Like, he immediately makes Knox, I think, twice as efficient as he has been for this season. He's just getting a much healthier shot profile, and that's one of the underlying big statistics on this team. They're, I think, either last or second to last in the NBA in wide-open shot attempts, and that's mitigated slightly by the fact that they're 11th in open shot attempts on the year. But either way, LeBron obviously dramatically changes that game. Guys like Alonzo Trier and Damian Dotson, who have both had great years shooting from three. They don't have the same time to create individual offense with LeBron on the floor, because why would those two be handling the ball for any significant amount of time with LeBron on the floor? But as spot-up shooters, I actually think they're somewhat effective complements to LeBron. And Mitchell Robinson, just kind of a fun little toy for LeBron to play with for 10 minutes a game. A guy he can throw lobs to, a guy who will do a somewhat decent job protecting his back defensively, which, again, that's kind of projecting forward because Robinson still has a lot to learn, but somewhat interesting. Then here's where this gets fun. By playoff time, you have Kristaps Porzingis back. Your starting lineup at that point looks like LeBron as your point forward, Tim Hardaway playing that off-ball secondary creator role, Kevin Knox, who presumably is much better at the end of the season than he is the beginning of the season, is kind of your very poor man's Jason Tatum, Lance Thomas, your 3-and-D wing, which again is, I'm being intentionally optimistic on this, but just stick with me, and then a healthy, or a somewhat healthy, Kristaps Porzingis as your center. And I love the idea of KP and LeBron playing together, because KP, again, and I think I said this on yesterday's pod, and it's something I'll reference a lot on this pod, I think he's such a low-maintenance superstar, and he's really one of the most fungible superstars in the NBA. I don't know if that's a real word, but I'm going to keep going. He's a guy you can plug into any lineup with any teammate, and he is going to find a way to fit, and he is going to find a way to be beneficial. With LeBron, he's an outlet for lobs. He's an outlet to kick out for threes. He's a rim protector behind him. He is the perfect fit next to LeBron James. You have a bench of Enes Kanter, Burke Moutier, Trier Dotson, Robinson. I think if you want to say that LeBron still has it in him to hit the level he hit last postseason, and who am I to question LeBron at any point in his career, I think that's a team that could make the Eastern Conference Finals. Do I think they beat the best possible version of the Celtics? No, I just don't. I don't think the depth is there. I think you're outmatched at every position that's not LeBron and KP, and LeBron almost lost to them last year, presumably a year better. That being said, I think with a healthy Porzingis, you actually have a much better supporting cast than LeBron had in Cleveland last year. So who knows? I give them a puncher's chance of advancing to the NBA Finals with that group. Scenario number two is in the preseason, knowing you're getting LeBron, you're saying, all right, screw it, we're all in on this season. Like, this is presumably, and I said this last year, and I've said it the last few years, so who knows if it's true, but presumably LeBron is never going to be a better player than he is this season going forward. So I'm going all in. I want to win right now. I am trading Kristaps Porzingis and Frank Ntilikina, or Kristaps Porzingis and Enes Kanter, maybe, if the Spurs were interested in him for some real reason. And then the Spurs do seem like the kind of team that would like Enes Kanter. He does play that kind of antiquated, post-oriented game that Greg Popovich seems to love. And he's a quote-unquote immediate impact guy. So under the guise of that argument, let's just say Porzingis and Kanter, goodbye. You just got shipped off to San Antonio. The Knicks trade a first or second round pick for some replacement level center. Let's just say Cody Zeller, and I'm currently editing that into my doc, just so it's feasible cap-wise, because I think if you keep Kanter, I don't think the Knicks are willing to pay for him, LeBron, Kawhi, and Hardaway, because then you're just deep, deep, deep into luxury cap territory. All right, so your starting lineup in this scenario. Point LeBron, Tim Hardaway, Kawhi Leonard, Lance Thomas, Cody Zeller, Ntilikina, Burke, Moutier, Trier, Dotson, Robinson, your very guard-heavy bench rotation. Presumably you end up trading Burke, Moody, and Ntilikina, some combination of them, for an extra wing or two. Maybe you get Kyle Korver at some point in the season. I think that team, just the combination of LeBron and Kawhi alone, you arguably have the two best players in the entire Eastern Conference, and with a big time shout out to Giannis, he is certainly in that mix, but you can make the case you have the two best players in the entire Eastern Conference on your team. I think that's a team that wins 60 games. I think that's a team, assuming LeBron and Kawhi stay fully healthy or playing at a high level going into the postseason, I think purely on the strength of those two and some maybe optimism on some of the complementary pieces, you get a few buyout guys. I think that's a team that makes the NBA Finals. I don't think it's one that challenges the Golden State Warriors because there's just too many deficiencies across the roster, but they are one injury away from winning a championship. So that was a trip down hypothetical lane and what could have happened if LeBron had signed with the Knicks in either 2010 or 2018. And I want to just make it clear, I'm usually a realist. I don't indulge myself in this way, but we have 2 weeks without Alex, so I thought I would go big and I would talk about something that I have personally always wondered about as a Knicks fan. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We will be back tomorrow to talk Knicks-Cavs.